Today's fan call-in is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR and use code ENDGAME30 to get 30% off Marvel products today. Endgame is coming, baby. And while you're there, check out their awesome Game of Thrones items. They got cufflinks, they got socks, they got ties, they got pins, they got so much awesome stuff, all with the house sigils, Hand of the Queen, Hand of the King pin. DJ's going to give out one tonight. So go to cufflinks.com/DVR today.
I am Sir Meron Trant, Honorable Knight of the Kingsguard, and I wish to say hello to Sir W. Axel Foley of the DVR Podcast Network and the podcast Winterfell. I also want to tell others, on pain of death, to follow and listen. Personally, I think they're upjumped cutthroats, nothing more. But listen to them anyway, or I will find you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Winterfell Fan Call-In Show. This is Season 8, Episode 1, titled Winterfell, and I am your host, DJ Tim Hines, and I'm here to bring you the people. That's right, what you guys want to hear, the fans' thoughts, the fans' opinions, and all the people who decided to call up, join in the chat, and get down with us at Podcast Winterfell, and we're here once again. Doing the thing that started many, many eons ago with Lost and carried over through many other shows and landed into good old Westeros and settled a home in Winterfell. Yeah, we're here. We got a new sponsor this year, Cufflinks.com. We got the DVR Podcast Network popping off and we're just doing it how we do. I got a few callers already in the lined up. And thanks to Cufflinks, every week I'm going to be giving away a Hand of the King pin. So I have a number. I wrote it down. You can listen to it. This paper. This paper has the winner of the order of the caller. So if you're the number on this thing in the order your call was received, you will win the Hand of the Kingpin. It's kind of a tongue twister if you think about it. But yes, our friends at Cufflinks.com decided to give us some great things to give away and just to show their love of our pod, of you guys, and of Game of Thrones. They made some great stuff. So I'm going to real quick talk about the episode. And as usual, I do a rating system. And I give a rating every year, and I'm thinking of a rating, and I'm like, I like this, and I like that, I don't like this, and you know how hard I am on the show, if you guys know previously, I've been a little, I reset the bar on what ratings would be, but you know what, I thought about it today, and this year, all my ratings, now, don't go by me, I would love to hear your rating, no matter what form it's in. But all my ratings are going to be colors. That's right. Last year on our Westworld podcast, I kind of switched it up and gave emoji ratings. Well, now I'm giving colored ratings. This week's episode was a burnt sienna. That's right. If you take the Crayola box, the big 64 pack, and look for that burnt sienna, bam. That's what I'm giving this week. It was a really fun episode with really touching moments. Boy, there was just some looks that were just so well worth not having said anything. There was some tension. There was some broken tension. There was love. There was regret. It was a very emotion-filled episode. I loved all that stuff. I liked a lot of the progression, and I just really enjoyed the episode. So, where I'm going to go with the rest of my feedback will be somewhere else. Where we're going to go with this week's feedback is we're going to bring it to our first caller. And this week, our first caller happened to be our good buddy Jim from Canada, and bam! Jim from Canada. What's happening, pal? Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am, man. Nice to hear your voice again. Good to be back.
Yeah, really good to hear you. How you doing?
Well, less anxious now, that's for sure, after a year and a half of waiting. So, you know, just glad that it kind of finally came, and sad to see that it's going to go in about a month and a half.
Well, let's not even talk about that for a while, and let's just keep it rolling right now with good thoughts, good vibes, because I don't want that to end.
Yeah, for sure.
But start it off, give me a rating if you got one. If not,
all right,
tell me how you feel.
Last year I was pretty much on a high note with them, so a lot of mine were like nines and tens if I could. I'm going to kind of keep it similar, man. 8 out of 10. And can't really go much higher just simply because it's the first episode, but really not much to disappoint. It was pretty much, you know, like Brad said, we don't got time for this. Let's just move things along and get to the meat and potatoes, right? So I was really happy with the episode. Like you said, a lot of quick interactions just to get the point across. Some, you know, tense moments with the looks between some of the ladies and even between John and Arya. But overall, yeah, great episode, man. Can't wait for the next one.
Yeah. What were some of your favorite scenes?
So, Bran, who doesn't have a lot of scenes, right? In my mind, he's kind of like that old kung fu master that sits in the background while everybody else is fighting. And then at the end, he just kind of shows you this messed up move and destroys everybody. So I'm kind of getting that vibe from Bran. And although he didn't do much this episode, like, the less he speaks, the more impact he has, right? I mean, the Jon stuff, you know, you're kind of expecting it. It was good. I enjoyed it. It's good to finally see it that he knows. But, I like the Bran stuff, man, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. Like, it was eerie, but so, I don't know what to say, like, Stark-like mixed with the Three-Eyed Raven-like. Like, it was almost like the perfect house to be picked from. Because you can't tell if he's Stark or you can't tell if he's just Raven.
Right. He's got this, like, you know, weird, like, this vibe, right? You know he's going to do something. You just don't know what he's going to do just yet. I'm not saying he's got superpowers or anything, but, I mean, he does in a sense. But it just, you know, I think it's all going to hinge on him kind of pulling that final switch for everybody, right?
Yeah, and he's, like, setting up the pieces almost. Like, it's almost like a game to him. Like, you know, I've heard Axel say a few things. Why wouldn't, you know, everybody say things together? Why, you know, we could have nipped all this with one conversation when he said, all right, enough of this. It's, you know, time for the main concern. The White Walkers are coming. But that was it. Like, he didn't say this, 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 and this. And it could have all been summed up. Everybody could have, you know, picked up the pieces. But he's kind of having his way with all the knowledge.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like the little sentences he says have such an impact, right? So it's almost like it's worth the wait, in my view. You know, I know a lot of people kind of thought he had a boring storyline in previous seasons, but I always enjoyed his character because ultimately, you know, it's all going to come through him to everybody else, right? So he's that linchpin that keeps it all together.
Yeah, for sure.
So, opening credits, man. Opening credits, how good were those?
Oh, they were great. I mean, the only thing that was a little goofy was the brightness of everything. But it was super, like amped up, trippy, the way they just combined all the moving parts. I mean, they look like gears, but they're not really gears. And everything that opens and closes and moves, it's really awesome. They did a sick job.
Right. And that, excuse me, that brightness, I don't know if you caught it, but at the top where the wall is, it's all ice. And then as it goes further, you can see it's snow, right? So it kind of, it's showing you the progression of the White Walkers, I would imagine. So I'm guessing next episode, there's going to be more ice further south of the wall, and then the next episode as well. So it looked like ice to me anyway. But yeah, I loved it, man. It was going down into the crypts, into the Red Keep, into the dungeon. You see that, you know, that scorpion with the dragon's head at King's Landing. So it was really good. It was good to, and you know what? It was good to not see Essos anymore. That's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. Because in my heart, I still want to know a lot of stuff about what's going on over there. But most likely, my brain says they'll figure it, doubtful.
Maybe they'll save it for another show, man. They'll make something else with it.
Yeah, you know what? That would be cool. You know, they start off opening that tomb in Karth, and they see some bones. They're like, whose bones are these? And it's like archaeologists, and it goes back in time. Some crazy stuff.
Yeah, Brett, you'll have Little Sam telling that story.
Yeah, right? Little Sam's like, well, one time I knew about this story of this Karth, and it was supposed to be the greatest, richest guy in the world. Oh, I can't pronounce his name. That would be funny. See, look, you keep that stuff.
There you go. I read it in a book, he'll say, just like his dad.
Yeah, just write this stuff down. See, I'm sure someone will buy it. Fan fiction, you know, it sells.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of callbacks too, man. You know, they had the opening scene, which was same as, you know, episode one with Robert and Cersei coming in. This time was Jon and Daenerys. The music was the same as that march. You had that little kid running around, just like Bran and Arya were. So, you know, lots of good callbacks. It's, you know, they're bringing it all together, man. I'm just glad to see that, you know, we're finally here, and hopefully people don't nitpick too much, because, you know, there's books, there's movie, show, they're two totally separate things, and keep them that way, you know, enjoy both till the end.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's kind of the relieving thing, is knowing that hopefully there'll be a book, you know, hopefully there'll be quality shows to follow, that even if they're halfway as good as this, you know, it's just something to look forward to. Because, you know, when you started off, you're like, we only have a few, you know, this many weeks. I'm like, I can't think about that now. We just started. But in actuality, you know, things move fast. But, you know, it's actually...
Yeah, and you know what? It's more I'm anticipating the end. It's not, I'm not thinking of it as a bad thing, right? Like, it's more, I can't wait to get there, right? Like, it's just a celebration, not like a sad thing for me.
Yeah, I was in a group on Facebook, it was on Facebook, and I said, man, they should have titled this episode Blue Balls, because I want more. I can't be left here like this. Like, damn. But, you know, what you're saying is kind of ties into what Varys says when the elder men are having their little conversation, and he ends with, nothing lasts. So I thought that was kind of like fitting, you know, so this is, you know, nothing lasts, but while it's here, we're going to talk about it. So if you want to hang out for a little bit.
They're throwing little nods.
Go ahead.
Sure, man.
Yeah, say another little piece. And then
I was just saying that they're throwing little nods to the viewers with stuff like that, right? You know, it's just like a little wink to us.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. You know, there's some purists that are like, oh, you know, why do they have to do that? But we're the ones who watch it, so it's what it's here for. I don't mind it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
I just thought, what I'll do is I'll hang out for a bit, let you jump on some other calls, but I do want to just mention something at the end, if you don't mind coming back. Just a little bit of how I think something might end with the show, if you don't mind.
Oh, heck yeah. I just, you know, I definitely want to hear more from you. I want to just, you know, get the other guys, people on, and we can dish it out later.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Jim.
Sounds good.
Thanks, man.
All right, man.
Jim's a good guy. We had caller number two, big fan of the pod, big fan of the network, big contributor. Brett is in the house. Welcome, Brett.
Thanks for having me, Tim. It's good to be on.
Oh, it's good to hear your voice again, man. This is great. It's like the team's back together. I see a lot of familiar faces in the chat, you know, on the call. you know, people tweeting. They were excited about it. So this is good. How are you feeling about the episode?
Yeah. I loved it. Yeah, I really did. Just like the last caller said, I'd probably give it about an 8 out of 10. It's a really solid way to start out the season, I feel.
Yeah, it sure was. I haven't heard from anybody that they were like dissatisfied that there was no battles or this and that about, you know, too many, you know, wasn't enough climax. It was awesome. It was all like info packed stuff, but with a lot of like mystery, snide looks and, you know, peculiar ways that people view, you know, like how
a lot of good acting.
Yeah. A lot of good acting.
And yeah, and not a ton of action, but just a lot of build up. And a lot of tension is building up. So you know it's coming.
Definitely. So what was some scenes that stood out? What was a scene that stood out for you? What'd you really like?
Well, listening to the blast call, I kind of wanted to piggyback on that and talk a little bit about Bran, because it occurred to me, I think he's actually starting to come into his own as the three-eyed raven. If you remember the scene, basically he's the one that told Sam to tell John about his lineage. And he said, "You have to do it right now, Sam." And I want to believe that he probably knew, because Axel talked about this too, about how Sam, having just learned about his brother and father dying and how emotional he was about that and how that really affected how he delivered that news to John. I feel like Bran actually knew that Sam was in that emotional state, that that had happened, and that he wanted Sam to deliver the news right then, because he knew that would be the most effective way for John to hear that news. And so I feel like that could be an example of Bran really utilizing his three-eyed raven powers, you know, kind of coming into his own there.
Yeah, because he could have easily said it right the second he saw him or had a conversation with the group, with the family. But it's like, I don't know if, you know, if it's on purpose, but, you know, Sam's the only one that knows other than Bran and John now. So I guess maybe it's done also to keep it's tight in case they don't want the news out, or, you know, what you're saying, you know, could be also tied in with that. But I like what you're saying, because Bran is slow playing everything for a reason, because he could easily out a lot of things. But, you know, Axel did say also another thing which made sense. Maybe he has to know what to look for to plug into the network. Like, he can't just know everything. Like, because if you remember last season, he had to go back and then conclude what he was looking for with, you know, his aunt giving birth to John.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like, yeah, and I'm sure he doesn't know everything yet, but he's knowing more and more all the time. And I feel like that scene might be an example of, like, him trying to use his, you know, all-knowingness power, you know, for good, or in a way that he's dictating what's happening.
Yeah, like, you know, maybe we're not able to handle so much information at once. You know, he has a special power to do it because he's the three-eyed raven. But as, you know, the rest of us, we might not be able to process that, especially in those times. They didn't have, like, the info that we have now, and we're still not able to process the info we see on a daily basis that passes through our, you know, through us, like between newspapers, TV, internet, like we see so much stuff on a daily basis. He's seeing who knows how many times more than that. So, Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
One concern.
And he did.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to throw in. And he his time with the Three-Eyed Raven was cut short. If you remember? You know, so he wasn't ready to become what he became at the time because the accelerated, you know, timeline there with the Army of the Dead on top of them. So he's still pretty raw.
Yeah, he's still got ways to go as far as what we know, you know, Bran's journey could possibly be. Like, he's got so much more, like, accessibility. But you're right. Like, how much, we wonder how much time would the Three-Eyed Raven have given him had they not been blown, you know, their cover when Bran got touched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we're talking about Bran a lot, and he was waiting for his friend to come, which we now know is Jaime, because he didn't really talk to Sam like that. But I was wondering, you think he doesn't feel cold? Like, he doesn't feel emotions? Because that boy sat out all night in the same spot in Winterfell. I don't know. Seems like a frostbite waiting to happen. You know, he can't feel his legs
good
anyway.
Point. Yeah, it makes you wonder. Yeah, because it's not like they had heated blankets back then or anything. Electric blankets.
Right, you know, and he doesn't know if his legs are cold. His toes are all black. We don't know what's going on down there. I feel bad for the kid. No one's talking to him. It's like everybody just walks by him except for the people who need to talk to him. It's like, you know, hey, it's Bran. Probably the most important Stark in the house, but you know, nobody talks to him. They just keep walking. But nah, he's a great character, and I love what he's kind of developed into, because it could have went a lot of weird ways with not only the magic or him being as a child. You know, we don't know, they could have made it more childlike, but he like grew up fast. And when John says,
yeah,
you're a man, he's like, well, not really, but, you know, John thinks he means, like, he's not really a man because he's still young. But he means he's not really a man. So, you know, it's like a play on that.
Yeah. Not really human.
Right, exactly. John's thinking, like, oh, you know, you're almost a man, like, of age. And, but, yeah. He's probably, I would say, going to be one of the top three most important characters in the finale.
It's hard to argue with that. I really think, you know, as more time passes, as he's able to hone his skills, he's going to be a real force to deal with.
Definitely. All right. So you got another point? You want to talk about something?
And but one thing that I was able to rewatch the episode today, and one thing I noticed on my second rewatch is the scene where Tyrion looks up and sees Sansa talking to Lord Royce. It's almost like they're talking in secret, and then he goes up there and kind of breaks it up because he wants to talk to Sansa, but kind of got me thinking, what was Sansa and Lord Royce talking about there? Are they kind of coming up with some sort of contingency plan if this mad queen doesn't work out? You know, the Daenerys coming into Winterfell doesn't work out. So it just kind of made me think maybe they had something secret going on in the works.
Yeah, it was weird. And it's kind of like, why Royce? You know, she figured that's the next closest house relative, because how loyal he was to her aunt. And he is a good choice. I do like him, you know, other than seem like he could be bullied a little bit. He is very noble, and I enjoy that part of him. So, like, I know he'd probably throw down for Sansa, no what, no problem.
Yeah, he's really loyal, and he has that connection to the Vale, who basically rescued them at the Battle of the Bastards. And that was all kind of Sansa's doing. That was, you know, that was her contingency plan at that time as well. So it could be that they already kind of had that, you know, relationship built.
Yeah, plus he probably gained respect because he had no love lost for Baelish. And the way, you know, he's out of the picture, it kind of keeps the North northern.
Right. Yeah.
But other than, I mean, we know now the Umbers and the Last Hearth are pretty much wiped out. That was pretty crazy, man. What'd you think about that?
That was crazy. Yeah, that was very startling. That was one of the more startling scenes that I can remember.
All right, so we're going to take a little quick break and hear from Axel.
Head over to cufflinks.com/DVR and you can use our own personal code, DVR20, to get 20% off your order at all times. No minimum purchase required, baby. That's right. DVR20 at cufflinks.com. And every week on our live fan call-in on Monday, if you call, you will be entered into a chance to win a Hand of the Queen or Hand of the King pin from cufflinks.com. So go to cufflinks.com, enhance your style when you walk out in the morning, feel good about yourself, wear it, baby. Cufflinks.com. Go there today.
You just heard from Axel with a little ad from Cufflinks, and back to the show. We were talking about the death of Little Lord Umber and until he got knocked off.
Yeah.
How you feel about that?
Yeah, that was some creepy stuff. He got what he's coming to, man.
Yeah.
He refused to help, right?
Oh, man.
So there you go. You know, Ned Stark said, right? There's the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. So they're going to all learn that lesson quickly, I guess.
Yeah, and then the little Glover boy left in the circle.
Yeah. It was kind of like that scene in, I'm forgetting, with the water. That lady said goodbye to her children, and then her kids turned into white.
Oh, at Hardhome?
Hardhome, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
So, similar to that, right? Like, whenever you got little kids turning into white and attacking and screaming, always kind of send some chills.
Sure. You know, and that scared the heck
yeah,
out of me.
But, yeah, that shriek, right?
I was not expecting that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, so we're back to you, and I want to ask you a question. What do you think about Arya and Gendry? Do you think there was, like, some kind of love connection there?
I don't think they tried, but I don't think they hit it off as much. You know, they could have stayed a few more, maybe a minute or so longer on it. But I think Arya's, I don't think she's made for marriage, man. Like her dad said, you know, you're going to marry a lord and you're going to be a good wife. And she said, no, that's not for me, right? So I don't see them getting together.
I don't know. It was cute, though, the way she was looking at him, you know. And
oh, yeah, for sure, for
the
sure.
The history that they have, like, as far as just starting off basically in the shit together and full circling it back to fighting together. It's kind of cool. Plus, their fathers are best friends.
Yeah,
like,
and that's what right, they're going to bring it all together. Just, you know, and that's what I'm glad the first episode did. It touched up on these things where we remember from, you know, years ago. And, you know, like I said, move on, right? Like, let's get to the main story. But, you know, address the fact that these guys are all in the same place now. And, you know, just rekindle those stories a little bit. So it was good to see. I don't think it's going to progress any further. Too much stuff going on.
I mean, you got a lot of weird webs that could be interwoven here. You know, if Arya, Gendry get together, and then Arya finds out Jon's a Targaryen, who then Gendry realizes that his Targaryen father, I mean, Jon finds out that Gendry's father was the one that killed his father. It could be a lot of saltiness going on, you know?
Yeah.
Stay away from my sister. She killed his dad killed my father.
Yeah. Jon gets all emotional again.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know how this is going to play out. I mean, that's probably the most fun of this episode, is that everything's still up in question. Like, as cool as it was to see everything and reintroduce with everybody, everybody's in question. You know, we don't know Euron's, you know, the way he described his plans to Yara. Like, he doesn't give a shit. He just wants to bang the queen and stay alive, basically. So he doesn't care who wins or loses. You know, like, there's a lot of indecision going on. You know, we don't know what Bronn's up to. So it's a fun, fun episode. I love this little rabbit hole we're going down.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think I got Euron as one of the first ones I think is going to get knocked off, right? Like, I don't see his purpose anymore. Like, he got the Golden Company over. I can't see Cersei giving in to him. I mean, yeah, maybe she just wanted to get laid and that's pretty much it. But I just don't see him progressing story-wise anymore. I know it's different in the books, obviously, but in the show, I just see him, you know, I don't know who kills him, to be honest with you. I think it might be, the Mountain. Just, you know, cut them right in half one day. Because Yara went up to the Iron Islands, so I don't see her meeting with him anytime soon. So I think the Mountain's just going to cut him in half one day, just whatever. So she's going to get bored with him and just,
that'd, you know, be great.
Chop him in half.
That was pretty much,
yeah,
my, you know, wish last year. I just want death this season. But this episode got me, like, giddy. That, like, I don't really want to see death, but Euron's an easy one to go. Like, I wouldn't mind at all. He's such a cocky, arrogant guy. And plus, like, he already got what he wanted. So if he goes, I guess he could, you know, go happy.
Yeah, there's no negative to the story if he goes. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's going to affect much more happening. So I have him as one of the first ones to go down.
Nice. Nice, nice. All right.
Yeah.
I got Brett back. I'm going to bring him in real quick, and I'll get back to you in a few minutes, and we'll talk about your ending theory.
Sure.
Good. Cool. Hey, Brett, welcome back. You had some technical issues, and I'm unmuting you and bringing you back into the call. And what's happening?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there.
It's all right.
But I'm back.
Ravens probably crossed up the internet lines. We know how it goes.
Right on. I think I left off about how...
You were so upset about little boy Umber and how messed up that was.
Yeah, and I just appreciate how scary they made it, you know, just to remind us what kind of threat we're dealing with here with these White Walkers.
Little Ned Umber, but I know. So how scary they are, right? And when they got there, when, you know, they was shown it, and Tormund's, you know, seen it, and it lit up, and the eyes went crazy and everything, and then the flames happened. What was it showing us? Why were they leaving that message? Like, just be afraid? What do you think their purpose is? Why are they coming?
I have no idea, but the fact that they left a symbol like that makes me think that there is a reason, you know?
Right.
And hopefully we learn that reason. There's some speculation that we may not get that this season, and that may be like a prequel series may touch on that. But just the fact that they're leaving these symbols seems like they have a motive. And... you know, I just hope we kind of learn a little more about that.
Right. It seems like if it was just death and destruction, there'd be no need for that. Because, first of all, if they've made it past there, why would they still even expect more people to go there? Like, because they're basically flooding north to south. Like, it's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they can see something.
One of my ongoing theories is that the Night King has basically the powers of the three-eyed raven, and that he can probably see the future on some level. And so he probably knew where some of those groups of people were and that they would eventually find that. I would not be surprised.
Hmm. Yeah, it's going to have to tie in something, like, because he's too calm the way he moves. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that got me thinking about the Night King and their whole army. And the funniest thing is, like, I'm thinking all about this stuff and I'm, you know, rewatching it twice. And all this cool stuff happened in the episode and I'm still thinking about them. And they weren't even in the episode. But there's a lot of cool things. Like, why are they moving at the pace they move? Like, why wouldn't the Ice Dragon just start flying ahead, wiping stuff out, coming back, you know, making their path easier? There's just a lot of weird, I'm thinking, like, I guess, military strategy that could be utilized, but it isn't. But with this symbol, it's like they're doing this with purpose for maybe not military, maybe for some other reason. Like, I can't figure that out, but it's just weird to me why they would go to those lengths.
It's like we don't understand, but it seems like there could be a reason for it. Maybe they need this entire army on foot, or the only way to really get the army from one place to another would be on foot, since it's, you know, 100,000 or however many people there are in it. And it just, there could be an overarching strategy. Maybe they do need to get south to a certain location in order to do something. And, you know, along the way, of course, they're going to try to build the army as much as possible. So I know they just grew their army when they went through the last hearth there with the Umbers. It's hard to know what the plan is, but there could very well be a plan, you know.
I mean, you know, it could be get into the Weirwood, the last few Weirwoods or something. We know that one's in Winterfell. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's one cool thing I really...
Yeah, I think...
Go ahead. Just going to say, one cool piece of that intro this year, of really seeing how encased that little piece of the forest was inside the walls of Winterfell with that remaining Weirwood. Like, to put it...
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's the first time we've kind of seen Winterfell from that angle.
Yeah, like, they showed it, but it wasn't, like, as detailed as far as, look how encompassed this tree is. So, I don't know, maybe it's pointing, maybe it's not, maybe it's we're nutty podcasters, who knows, but it's fun to think about these things.
Well, there does seem to be a connection with the Weirwood trees, and we may get a little more of that when eventually they get to Winterfell, and we'll see if the Night King has some sort of interaction with that tree. That's kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah. And, you know, the Children of the Forest were protecting the other ones. And the last time they came there, they had that battle and they burnt that one up that the Three-Eyed Raven was in. So, I don't know. But, yeah, there's a lot to learn down there. Speaking of down there, I'm going to go there and I'm going to ask you a down there question about a woman's down there. And it's Cersei's down there. What do you think? Is she pregnant? Was she hiding it? Was it a ruse? A lot of mystery here. She was drinking wine. She, you know, the way Euron grabbed her belly, it was nowhere near the way she made it puffed out last year. So let's hear your thoughts.
What? So was she drinking wine for sure in the episode?
I'm just assuming. It could have been grape soda. I don't know.
Yeah, probably was. Yeah, I didn't even think about that because I was pretty convinced that she was pregnant before watching the episode. But maybe, you know, maybe not. That could be a clue. I'm not sure now. But, all along I had assumed that she was pregnant. It made sense that, you know, with her conversation with Tyrion and with Jamie, with Qyburn, I think we saw a little bit of last season, that kind of fit, that would be an explanation and one of her motivations for staying alive and, you know, keeping the kingdom together for her son or her child.
But it's also...
So that made sense to me.
It's also an easy way to make men sort of do what you want to do who are your relatives. So look how easy Tyrion bought it and told Sansa, and she's like, are you kidding? Like, she right away, she's like, I don't believe a thing Cersei says. And that led me to, like, start really buying into the fact that she was bullshitting them. Because, you know, oh, it gives her something to, you know, fight for. Nah, not really. She just wants everything because she's spiteful now. Because, you know, she just wants it. So it made Tyrion's heartstrings get pulled. And Jaime might think that Sansa didn't buy it. And I'm starting to not buy it. Because even if no time passed and she had that little bump, I think Euron would have noticed the little bump while they were bumping. And he didn't seem to notice the little bump. And the bump certainly didn't appear on screen. So, I don't know.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, you're starting to talk me into it, really.
You know what? Just a little things I'm picking up here and I'm wondering, like, because, you know, she's always up to no good. And they keep alluding to her being crafty and, you know, having all these tricks up her sleeve. So she's going to stay in power no matter how she can. And, you know, she's like, look, she's trying to pay off Bronn. She's trying to pay off our dude, Bronn. This guy's one of the funniest guys in the show, and you're putting him in a bad position. And, you know, he's having a hard enough with the time and the positions he's in, with these women around him, talking about other dudes and PTSD. He's like, listen, I don't want to hear about the battle. I just want to get my rocks off. And he can't even do that. Qyburn interrupted him. So, I don't know. I don't know. You think he's going to do it?
Well, that whole scene was... Yeah, that whole scene with Bronn was a little weird. I don't know if I'd believe that Cersei just wants him to go up and kill her brothers. That seems too simple, almost.
I mean, he'd be the guy to get close to them to do it, but it just seems weird. Like, if it all ends, that's what you care about. You already owe all this gold out to the Golden Company and all these other people. I don't know. Just very strange, that scene. But I hope Bronn... I hope he shoots her with that crossbow.
I'll take that.
All right, let me ask you a few questions. I'm going to let you go ahead, bring up a point, anything you want to talk about.
Let's see. It all comes back to the White Walkers for me. And I lost my train of thought. I thought I was going to say something more about the Night King.
See, look at it. See how it's going back. We're talking about the guys who aren't even in the show this episode. So funny. We get every other character that's left, but we're talking about the Night King. But that's how it is.
You know? Right.
That's the speculation part. That's what we do. The podcast fun.
Oh, I will say this. I'm curious how Essos will come into play because I'm not convinced that, you know, they're just going to stay in Westeros the entire year. And now... I know that we didn't see Essos on the map in the beginning credits, but we did see Last Hearth, and we're probably not going to see them again. And so I have a feeling it's eventually the map is going to open up a little bit more, and hopefully we will see Essos. And I'm just kind of wondering how they will come into play, because we know that Dario is still over there, and I don't think they would just write off that character.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many loose ends. I'm still waiting to find out what Pyat Pri is all about. Like, there's that whole faction of magic over there that still has never come back into the show. And it probably won't. It's a silly thing, but it's like, it's still one of those Essos things. Like, we still kind of want to know about the Stone Men. Like, are they just stuck there? Is there a purpose? You know, why did we see, we heard about it, that would have been fine, but why did Tyrion and Jorah go through there? Was it just to get Jorah the Grayscale? Or was it a bigger purpose? Like, there's a lot of other parts other than just Westeros and the Night King and the, you know, the Whites. Like, we never found out about if there's a White faction that's marching south in Essos.
No, we haven't. And I will say this, the Lord of Light, I think, is going to be a big factor. We've already seen, obviously, the Lord of Light supposedly is responsible for bringing, you know, Beric back six times, bringing Jon back. Melisandre has already said that she has to return to Westeros before she dies. So something to do with the Lord of Light is definitely going to come into play.
Yeah, she was going to get some other help somehow, so maybe bring more magic. I don't know. Magic plus two dragons might work.
It might, yeah. I'm not exactly sure what she's doing. I can't remember if she said that what she was doing over there or not.
Yeah, well,
but yeah, sure. Just get a bunch of red priestesses and bring in some more magic.
All right, well, I'm going to let you gather your thoughts if you want to hang on. I'm going to open up the call and probably bring Jim back, talk to him a little bit, and bring you back in a minute.
Sounds good.
Right on. So we'll take a peek here, see if Main Man got his mic back up. He may have, he may not have, but if he didn't, you know, that's how it is. Hey, Jim, what's happening?
Yep, back here.
All right, I got you back on.
I just wanted to touch up on was it Brent or?
Yeah, it's Brett.
The other caller? Brett, sorry. So I was just going to, he just kind of reminded me of something he said about, or was it you that said about the Stone Men and, you know, what's going on in Essos over there? So it just got me thinking, you know, Axel has that theory that the Grayscale is going to play a role here in the end. I don't know if you've heard Axel talk about it.
Sure.
And I was kind of thinking that one way it could play a part in it is if you infect all the living people with Grayscale on purpose so they can fight the Whites. I mean, we're still going to need Valyrian steel for the White Walkers, but to fight, you know, 100,000 Whites, you just unpurposely infect all of Westeros with Grayscale, and that kind of makes them, I don't know, immune or something like that, or if they touch the Whites, they die automatically, so you don't have to burn them, you don't have to fight them in that sense. So it just kind of popped in my head while you guys were talking about that. So props to Axel for the theory, but yeah, I think that might play a role. You never know.
It's definitely stuff that's might never get solved, but is like juicy little tidbits. I would love to see that kind of stuff, like a purpose for it. You know, obviously we can say that the Jorah storyline was the purpose, which I would be fine with. But I, at this point, I want a little more magic. If we're getting this much magic from here, I want to see different types come into play. You know, Kyburn's
able to... It
might
be too late, but...
If Kyburn's able to summon the mountain back, he's got to you know, be able to conjure up some other black magic.
Yeah, and he's got that hand with him, so who knows what he's working on, right?
Yeah, the hand, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit on Sansa, man. You know, everybody gave her grief in previous seasons, but you could see how she's kind of coming into her own now, obviously, the last season of the season. And it kind of made me laugh because when she was looking at Daenerys, you know, I'm sure anybody that's got, you know, brother-in-laws and sister-in-laws, and once you get married, you know, you kind of get the in-laws, the sister-in-law fighting with your wife or your brother-in-law fighting with your husband. And it kind of made me chuckle that, you know, although some people might say Sansa's acting kind of snobby, I think, you know, she's just kind of standing her ground. You know, she's, I think she's doing right the way she's acting. Although she's not my favorite character per se, I don't really find too much wrong with her. I think she's approaching it the right way. Be cautious, you know, this is your home. Yeah, let, you know, Daenerys in, she's the queen, but, you know, keep an eye on her type of thing, right? So,
yeah.
Since we haven't brought Sansa up, just wanted to kind of mention that.
She had, like, the straightest-faced, non-movement eye roll that I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was perfect. It was like, she wanted to be like, psst, who's this? But, like, didn't break face, but you could still see it. Like, it was probably some of the best acting she's done this whole series, is, I think, in this episode.
Yep.
She's finally fitting the leader role. And I think what Arya said is really true. Like, Sansa's finally understanding this, all this shit she had to endure is like the way life is. So what's the things that she's clinging to? Allegiances, the properness of family, the world, like battle strategy, like the things, the way things are supposed to be done. Whereas it seems like John and some other people are giving up tradition, where she's holding that.
Yeah, she's being like Ned, right?
Yeah, very, you know, much.
Take care of the family first.
So, yeah. I you know, as much as I used to make fun and joke around about whiny Sansa, she's awesome the last 2 years. She really has come around. And, you know, that being said, it wasn't that she wasn't awesome those other years, because knowing now the type of actress she is, she was awesome. It was just the role written for her. Just kind of sucked that she had to play that.
Absolutely. Yeah, she just had to go through all of it to get to this point. So, and that's cool, you know. I mean, it shows her progression.
It's almost one of the most fun to watch. I mean, other than Arya, because it's the most vast.
Yeah, and she's gone from a girl to a woman, right? Like, you get to see the transformation. How she's, you know, last year she said to John, you know, nobody can protect me, and she's taken that to heart. And, you know, she's going to be the leader that she feels that she needs to be. And I think that she can be, right? So I think she ends up Queen of the North in the end. She stays up there.
I'd like it. I mean, at least Warden of the North, like, if it goes back to the old ways, she should still be in charge of the North. Like, the way she stands and her posture, it's so authoritative. Like, she just commands respect just by the way she looks. And she doesn't seem to, like, demean people. When she looks at them, she, like, embraces what they're saying, but with respect, but with, like, understanding.
Yeah, she's the boss.
I'm digging it. I'm digging it. And now things are all going to be haywire.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It's just going to be haywire with John and what to do.
Yeah, that's gonna be a tough one to figure out. Like I said, I do have a theory on how John's story ends, I think. But just quickly with John, just to jump around a little bit, I found it, you know, really touching when the last time you saw Ned, you know, Ned said, next time we see each other, I'll tell you the truth, right? I'll tell you about your mother.
Yep.
And then when Sam revealed the secret, it was in front of Ned's statue, right? So in essence,
beautiful.
The next time you saw Ned, which was there, he did end up finding the truth. So, yeah, he lied to him and didn't lie to him at the same time, right?
It's so awesome you picked up on that. I saw the same thing, and I'm thinking the same thing. Ned going, next time I see you, I'll tell you about your mother. And his face is, like, just in the corner.
Quivering, right? Yeah. It was a nice little touch that they brought it back to that.
The whole episode had warmth in it. You know, Arya looking over at John and like letting him do his thing instead of running over and being a little girl, John, yeah, my brother, which totally would have been acceptable. But looking proud of her brother. And then their reunion was so warm. I think it was one of the warmest scenes in the show, especially for such a cold character.
Yeah, and they threw that little humor in where they're comparing swords, you know, just like, you know, stick them with a pointy end, you know, how he said back then.
Yeah.
Their relationship, right, is that playful but, you know, loving relationship. You can definitely see it, right?
Yeah, man. Nah, definitely.
And with Arya's faces, you know, it's funny. When the episode started, you saw, you know, she was almost sad that Jon didn't notice her. And then when she saw the Hound, she was angry. And then when she saw Gendry, she was, you know, happy. So you got to see, like, a whole range of emotion with her emotions literally in, like, 30 seconds. You know what I mean? And that's what I liked about the episode as well. It was just quick, you know, touching moments and move on. Like, it was nice. It was a good episode.
Most definitely. Yeah. You know, we covered a bunch of stuff. And if you know, while I got you here, I'm going to talk about a couple things. And one of them is
sure.
We got a, you know, our sponsor, which that's one. We, you know, we've talked about that. But we got this other thing. We linked up with Guest the Throne. I'm not sure if you participated in that.
Yep.
They had 43,000 entries for this,
nice.
Which is
good for them.
Fantastic. And we were going to have them on tonight, which we're going to have them on every week from here on out. And when we were talking earlier, we were like, well, no one died, so we can't really go over anything. So right now, there's still 100% of the pools alive. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know, not like the first round of the NCAA, which everybody was like pulling their hair out if they had any. But
I'm sure the bracket busting will start clicking around.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Dude, we're gonna probably, you know, have like 30% eliminated the second episode. Like in the first 10 minutes. It's probably like whack, 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 whack. But you know, this game is a lot of fun, and these guys are great for making this thing. So, you know, somewhere through the show, we're going to have them on each week, and we'll talk about that, break down some analytics, because there's really nothing more hype about it, but just more talk about how it's breaking down, you know, how many people picked certain people that died, and these guys are great.
Yeah, it adds a new twist to it, man. And you know what? Share the love, right? You know, we're all in this to kind of get all these different point of views and, you know, even stats, right? I like sports, so I'll definitely listen to them and see what they have to say.
Yeah, me too, dude. That's why this like lines up. So, you know, it's kind of perfect for the March Madness type season. Plus, you know, those who like that kind of stuff. And I stats are awesome. Anybody who knows me, listening to the podcast, I used to count how many Unsullied there were. I'd pause the screen and, you know, multiply 10 by 5 on this row. But, you know, the guys used to think I was nuts. But, I don't know. That stuff's fun. Logistics is fun. Stats is fun.
It's a nice twist.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, I want to mention something to you guys too, man. You know, when I first started listening to you guys, going back with Matt, you know, probably 5-6 years now, I think. Anyways, it was kind of like a small group of you guys, and you didn't have a far reach, right? But you guys were always like one of the top podcasts for me anyways. But the last year, I've seen you guys kind of branch out with new guests. And you know what? I think you guys are getting the respect that you deserve. And, you know, I just thought if I could clap right now, I'd give you guys a nice clap and just say, keep at it, man. You guys are doing a great job. And, you know, there was some podcasts that, you know, back in the day, they put you guys down a couple of times, man. And you know what? You guys are one of the last ones standing here, and you're doing great. And just kind of keep the machine going, man.
Ah, man, I can't thank you enough, because that's an awesome compliment. You know, we just do it because we like it, and we never try to hit the top, and we never go extra hard with, you know, all these promotion tricks where people pull pods and repost them and do all these things to get notarized. But it has felt really good over the year or so. I mean, this last 2 weeks, we've been featured on the front page of Pandora. We were featured on Stitcher. So these are like big outlets and new outlets, because we were used to like the main couple podcast apps. So it's a real big deal for us.
I think you guys deserve it, man. You guys deserve it. And you know what? You're real fans. You know, you're not hiding behind, you know, like, let's read off a script or anything. Just shoot from the hip and say it like it is. And if people like it, great. If they don't, hey, whatever, man. You know?
Nah, I'm glad you noticed that. And it's fun having a few people involved. You don't get the same voices. And we have a few different types of shows. You know, I love keeping the fan calling going, because this is, you know, basically how we started, through Lost doing this, and then Matt started the call in with Game of Thrones. So we had to keep that part going. I think this is one of the better parts of the podcast, because people get to participate other than sending in written feedback or audio recorded feedback. You know, we could dish it back and forth, and to me, that's the most fun. That's how I found these guys, you know, 15 years ago. And that's how I got part of the crew. And, you know, it's just fun. And, you know, I appreciate everything you said. That was a big deal. You're the man, Jim.
Yeah, man. You guys enjoy it. You can tell that you guys enjoy doing it. So keep it up.
Well, you know, what's really cool is that I had the paper written out, and it was caller number one who was going to win Hand of the King pin. So, I mean...
No, man, they're going to think that I bribed you now.
No, I mean, we only had two callers, and we're going to wrap up in a couple minutes, and I really did. I had one, but, you know, flattery will get you somewhere, but it definitely didn't get you the Hand of the King pin. You won that. And, thanks for participating.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate
even
it.
Though you didn't know you were participating. But yeah, caller one won the Hand of the King pin from cufflinks.com. Jim from Canada.
There you go, man.
You're the man. We'll definitely be in touch.
I appreciate it.
You send me your address, we'll get you that pin. So you know the information, right? podcastwinterfell@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Send it in. Say, this is Jim from Canada. Here's my deets. And send me my pin. So this has been a good discussion, man. All right, so Jim's breaking it down right now. Hit us with this little theory that's a little bookish, might be spoilerish. If you're not into it, you could skip ahead, but I think it fits in the realm. Give it a shot. It's not going to really ruin anything. Just adds a little book stuff, but this is what we got.
Nice. All right, before we go, let me just throw something at you.
I'm hoping this is it. This is what I've been waiting for.
All right. Okay, so John's ending, right? You never read the books. I'm pretty sure you didn't, right?
No.
Okay, so just a little background. So there's a thing, there's this guy called Cregan Stark. And during the War of the Dragons, I'm sure you've heard of it, right? Like, there's two sets of Targaryens fighting for the throne.
Right.
Okay, so in the end, skipping all that stuff, the usurper Targaryen got poisoned, right? And this guy, Cregan Stark, was called down to help the other Targaryen. So when he got there, the war was over, and he was pissed because he didn't have anybody to fight, just like a typical Stark, right? He wanted to die in battle. So when he got there, he had a trial for all the traitors, you know, people that supported the usurper Targaryen, plus the people that took part in poisoning the king, because he was honorable, and he said, you know what, you still poisoned the king. Even though you defeated the king for us, that's still treasonous. So what he did was he had all these executions, sent people to the wall, and then he got up the next day. He was made Hand of the King for one day, I believe, and then he got up, packed up, and went back to Winterfell. So I think John's story is going to be similar to his. instead of taking a throne, he goes with Danny down south. He takes care of all the traitors and then just makes his way back up. Instead of Winterfell, he goes to the wall and he rebuilds the wall in the end. I think that's kind of the bittersweet ending, right? Where Daenerys wins the throne, but Jon can't stay there because his honor is at the wall. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and that's kind of what we're looking at here. And they called it the Hour of the Wolf.
I mean, it's almost like Jon has that in him where he, even though he keeps getting all these titles, he doesn't want any of it. He never wanted this stuff. Like, he, as much as he wanted to fight with his family, he was okay with going to the wall. Like, he didn't, you didn't hear him moan about it, you know, in the first couple episodes when Ned was sending him there. It was his duty. And I feel that he has that duty and honor. So, like, I like that. I mean, that might fit, and that might also appease the book tie-up somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's bittersweet. Like they say, the ending's going to be bittersweet. Bittersweet to me doesn't mean, you know, Danny dies, Johnny lives. Bittersweet just means it doesn't go the way we thought it would, but they could still survive, the main characters, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be just death for everybody.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, if you're alive, I think that's pretty, you're ahead of the game in this show. So if you come out alive at the end, like, you're already winning. So, you know, the bittersweetness is just like getting what you want. You know, like, if Sam doesn't get to the Citadel and become the ruler of the Citadel, whatever. But is he alive? All right.
Yeah. Exactly. There you go.
All right, man. That's a good theory. I love it. I hope it keeps morphing, and every week you bring something different, to it. We can compound.
I was going to say, it probably will.
Either that or John dies in the first 5 minutes next week, and it's over. Hopefully not.
There you go. Then I'm out of the pool, man.
Oh, boy. He's your final four?
I got him, Daenerys, Tyrion, and Sansa, I believe. I don't see... you know what? Just quickly. So, Arya. I think Arya uses that weapon that she made. Like, the picture I have in my mind is Jon's about to get attacked by the White... the Night King, or one of those guys. And Arya, like, shoots that whatever contraption she made. She shoots it. It's made out of... dragon glass. Shatters the White Walker, and then as that's happening, another Wiker comes behind and stabs Arya through the heart. There's your bittersweet. Jon lives because of Arya, but she dies saving him.
Oof, there's another bittersweetness. Look at you, man. You should make cookies. Yeah. Bittersweet chocolate chips.
There you go. With the faces of death.
All right, well, thank you again for calling. I appreciate having you on. And, it was two people got to get on. It was you and Brett. Main man was in the chat. He couldn't get his mic working. And we didn't get YouTube up, hopefully next week. But I had a fun pod. I hope you did. And I appreciate you calling.
Yeah, man, had a blast.
Awesome.
I'll try to join you guys every week.
All right. Until next week, man. Vala Morghulis.
Rala Duhara, son.
Yeah.